The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you for the Reader's Digest. And first of all, thanks so much for coming back. It's good to be back here. It's been a while, obviously, with the COVID virus and everything else. We were kind of running a little behind our normal schedule. But I thought I'd start off with a little something that's kind of current right now, and that says protect yourself and others from coronavirus. The novel coronavirus quickly spread around the globe, turning into a pandemic. The virus can lead to COVID-19, a disease marked by respiratory problems that are usually mild, coughing, fever, can become severe pneumonia, organ failure, especially in older adults and people with underlying health conditions. One of the best ways to protect yourself is by social distancing, avoiding gatherings, stay at home as much as you possible, and keep 6 feet away from others unless you have to go out. You should also wash your hands thoroughly and frequently, and use hand sanitizers that's at least 60% alcohol when you can't get to a sink. Here are some additional ways to stay safe. Sanitize your smartphone without damaging it. Research suggests that the novel coronavirus may survive on surfaces for hours or even days. So if you touch your phone constantly, or so many of us do, you need more than the usual microfiber cloth to clean it. For Apple and Google phones, power down your device, then use a wipe with 70% isopropyl alcohol to gently clean it. Apple says that Clorox disinfecting wipes are also safe to use. Clean screen protectors with plain old soap and water, being careful not to get any moisture into the open ports. You can remove protective cases and wash them with soap and water, too. Just be sure to dry them completely to avoid using bleach on smartphones and never submerge your device or any other in any cleaning agents. Clean high-traffic areas, those frequently touched. Clean the areas in your home that are frequently touched, such as doorknobs, kitchen counters, and bathroom faucets, especially if someone in your household is sick. Disinfect them at least once daily with a product that kills viruses, such as diluted bleach, or an alcohol solution with at least 70% alcohol. To read more about virus-killing household cleaners, go to Clean the Products That Destroy Coronavirus. It's later on in the book. And don't forget to disinfect the remote control, too. Take the batteries out first. As the weather gets warmer, wearing gloves when you're out in public space can be sticky and uncomfortable. If you don't have hand sanitizer, some stores in the U.S. are in short supply. Use a tissue to open the door or grab a handrail, suggests Karen Hoffman, RN, an infection prevention specialist at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine in Chapel Hill. Hey, local lady. And immediate past president of the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. Practice safer shopping. For older people and those with underlying health conditions, it would seem I would strongly suggest asking someone to shop for you or using a grocery delivery service, says James E. Rogers, Ph.D., CR's Director of Food Safety Research and Testing. When deliveries arrive, avoid a direct handoff and tip electronically. Many companies have places on their orders forms for you to leave special delivery instructions. Ask for the items to be left at your doorstep. If you're going to shop in a store, plan on doing a big shop so you can limit your trips and pick an off-peak time by going online and typing the store's name and location in a Google search. A box will often appear showing when foot traffic there is lowest, and many stores are setting aside special hours for shoppers 60 and older and those with respiratory problems or other health conditions in an effort to help them shop in a less crowded environment. No matter what store you visit or what time you go, make sure to take another sanitizer with you to clean your hands and wipes to disinfect your cart before and after you shop. You can also bring a rubber-tipped pen to sign the screens at checkout. Most of the stores now are cleaning the carts or they have hand sanitizers available. Antibacterial soaps target bacteria, and the novel coronavirus is a virus. So an antibacterial soap is unnecessary. In fact, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, doesn't recommend that consumers use soaps with antibacterial ingredients, even to reduce the risk of bacterial infections, noting that research shows they offer either no other benefit compared with plain soap. Rubbing your hand together with plain soap and water for at least 20 seconds is extremely effective at removing any germs, whether that's dirt, a bacteria cell, or a virus particle. But soap doesn't kill them on contact, it washes them away. The surfactants in soap lift up and break apart dirt and microbes from your skin, explains Don Schaefer, Ph.D., a microbiologist and distinguished professor at Rutgers University. And the friction and rubbing of your hands together helps remove the particles so they get washed down the drain. And this is kind of important, too. Beware of false products and phishing scams. Con artists love to take advantage of new health scares to cash in on the public's anxiety, says Chuck Bell, program director for CR's Advocate Division. CR found a number of questionable products being sold online with claims that they help fight or even prevent COVID-19, including protective hats. And with more people working from home, cyber criminals eager to gain access to corporate computer systems are on the prowl. Some email letters that may appear to be from World Health Organization, WHO, or the CDC, claim to offer new information about the virus. Some emails hint at the availability of a vaccine, and others claim to be from charitable organizations looking to raise money for people with the disease. Consumers need to be vigilant and use the common sense before checking in email links about the coronavirus pandemic. If a claim sounds too good to be true, you can bet it probably is. Do your laundry in warm water. Experts don't currently have data on how long the new coronavirus can remain on clothes and other fabric, but it can last on other surfaces such as cardboard or plastic for hours or even days. Wash potentially contaminated clothes and linens as usual, but use the warmest appropriate water setting for the items and dry items completely, the CDC says. The CDC doesn't recommend using a specific detergent plus bleach, but the International Scientific Forum on Home Hygiene says that the bleach may help inactivate viral microbes in the wash. So if you're washing whites and light colors, you may want to add bleach to the load. Or you could use a detergent that contains color-safe bleach if it's appropriate for the items you're washing. Also, more research is needed to determine what temperature might inactivate the virus. Schaefer explains that the entire washing process should rid fabrics of the coronavirus. He says it's a combination of detergent, warm water, and physical agitation in the rinse and spin cycles that removes inactivities and washes away viral microbes. Once the washing is done, use a dryer rather than air drying clothes because the heat may help inactivate any viral microbes. Plus, dry fabrics are less likely to transfer germs than wet ones. If you go to a laundromat, stay at least 6 feet away from anyone else and disinfect handles before you touch the dials. Okay, now let's go to some lighter subjects, so to speak. Daddy issues. Important breaking news about fathers. 1. 4-year-old convinced father is a moron after 45th consecutive hide-and-seek victory. Glendale, Pennsylvania. Expressing embarrassment and disappointment over being the son of such a loser, local 4-year-old Connor Hayward has convinced Friday that his father, Craig Hayward, was a moron after losing 45 consecutive games of hide-and-seek. Jeez, this is bad. I've hidden behind that bush a dozen times, and this dope still can't find me, says Connor, confessing that after finding his father crouched behind a chair half his size, he had started to worry he might grow up to be a complete imbecile, just like his dad. At first, I thought I might be really good at this game, but after about an hour of hiding underneath a hamper with visible holes, I realized he's completely out to lunch. It'd be one thing if he were only bad at seeking, but so far his best hiding spot was behind the back door. Who hides behind a door? But there's no strategy to it whatsoever. One time I went out to find him and he was just standing behind a kitchen stool. He wasn't even crouching behind it or anything. At press time, a visibly frustrated Connor had emerged from his hiding spot to help his father search for his 2-year-old brother. By the way, this is a humor section here. Number 2. Reality of fatherhood never truly dawned on man until he held newborn son's hospital bill. Missoula, Montana. Describing how he suddenly found himself overwhelmed by a flood of intense emotions, local make Mike Benson told reporters Monday the reality of fatherhood didn't truly set in for him until the moment he held his newborn son's hospital bill. Wow, this is going to totally change my life, said Benson as tears welled up in his eyes, adding that he was left completely speechless by the little bundle of papers, and that it would probably take some time before the magnitude of what had just happened fully sank in. I've had friends tell me about their experience, but you just can't understand what it feels like until you're looking down it in your own hands. It's hard to even put into words. Whatever my world was like before, I just know things are going to be very different from this day forward. Benson reportedly started weeping softly as he sat down with his son's medical invoice in his lap and began imagining how he would deal with this for the next 18 years. Number 3. Baby distracted by father, now he fears he left home without his oversized multicolored plastic keys. Rockford, Illinois. Patting down his onesie with mounting concern, local 8-month-old Joshua McCannis was reportedly overcome by a sharp sinking feeling Monday upon realizing he had left home without his oversized multicolored plastic keys. Oh, no! You have got to be kidding me, Joshua thought, his stomach dropping as he wondered how he could possibly make it through the day without his large ring of blue, pink, yellow, and green keys. Ah, for crying out loud! I got so wrapped up in that game of peekaboo with Dada, before I headed out, that I must have totally spaced on grabbing them. I bet they're still sitting there on the activity table right next to my phone on wheels. I'm such an idiot. The first American word. In a letter he sent home in 1608, British explorer John Smith described a critter he called Arahachum. There was no English word for the North American animal, so Smith borrowed the sounds used by the Algonquins. Over the years, the name was simplified to raccoon, which is now considered one of the first English words coined in America. All right, this next article kind of applies to the way things are right now. Get angry the right way. Understand your rage can help you express it more healthily. The driver who cuts you off in traffic, the neighbor who don't pick up after their dog, the insurance company that keeps you on hold for eternity. Situations such as these get our hearts racing and send our stress levels skyrocketing. Anger isn't a pleasant feeling. Some of us bottle up the emotion while others explode in a wild rage. Both habits have repercussions for our bodies, our minds, and our relationships. Anger may feel uncomfortable, but it's also normal and healthy. A lot of people think they have to get rid of their anger, says Patrick Keelan, a registered psychologist in Calgary, Alberta. But angry is an emotion built in us to signal that something needs to be addressed. When we take notice of that signal and actually rectify the problem instead of ignoring it, we're usually much better for it. Unfortunately, many of us have been conditioned to keep our emotions hidden. Increasingly, research is suggesting that this can have long-term effects on our health. Investigators at the University of Rochester noticed that people who suppress their emotions tend to have shorter lifespans. They're more likely to die earlier from cancer, for example. When we're angry, stress hormones such as adrenaline and cortisol are released, which can make us prone to developing a wide range of diseases, including diabetes, depression, and autoimmune conditions. It's better, then, to scream and holler whenever something makes you mad. That's the rationale behind the rage rooms that popped up in many American cities, where folks are invited to vent their anger by violently smashing stuff in a safe environment. The theory is that you get anger out of your system through aggressive actions, and it's cathartic, says Keelan. But the research indicates that when we display our anger aggressively, it can actually increase the intensity of the anger and increase the likelihood of aggressive actions in the future. It doesn't take much imagination to predict how a furious rampage can affect your relationships with your spouse, your kids, or your coworker. It also hurts your health. A large 2016 study at McMaster University found that people are more than twice as likely to have a heart attack after an angry outburst. The increased blood pressure and heart rate puts stress on the cardiovascular system, and if there's already some plaque hidden buildup, the blood flow to the heart may be restricted. If we shouldn't bottle up our angry feelings, but aggressive behavior isn't healthy either, how should we handle things that tick us off? It's the extreme highs and lows that take a toll. If you're able to apply techniques to smooth out some of those peaks and valleys, you can have a gently ride. Start by looking beyond the superficial trigger to your fury. Anger is often precipitated by underlying feelings of fear, anxiety, disappointment, and guilt. Maybe you're furious that your spouse is late, but it's really because you were afraid he or she had a car accident in the bad weather. Also, pay closer attention to your triggers, those daily irritations you know will set you off. Do you get angry at the long lines at the grocery store? Take a step back and consider that it isn't personal. Everybody in the line has dinner to make, just like you. One proven method of dealing with anger is to talk about it. Brain imaging at the University of California, Los Angeles, and elsewhere has shown that if you name your feelings, you can actually calm the activity in the amygdala, the part of the brain that triggers the release of adrenaline and cortisol. There is a value to expressing what you don't like, what's happening, because it's an opportunity for change, says Diane McIntosh, a psychiatrist at Vancouver, British Columbia. It helps to take a cool-down period before explaining to someone you're angry with how he or she rocked your boat. That will allow the effects of the adrenaline to wear off, which in turn allows you to reflect on what's bothering you. Do some controlled breathing or find some physical activity to take the edge off? There's clear evidence that exercise helps with feelings of anger, says McIntosh. When you're ready to approach the other person, focus on the behavior and why it upsets you, not the person's character traits. Avoid calling the other person names. Don't swear, and don't make generalizations such as "you always do this." The idea, says Keelan, is to bring up your reasonable points to the other person in a manner that is most likely to get a constructive and non-defensive response. If you're on the receiving end, remember that there are benefits to acknowledging and trying to understand the other person's anger. Try often to make a change, if that seems fair to you. If you're willing to be a partner in working through heated situations, the other person will be much more likely to bring matters up constructively in the future. In the end, you'll both be healthier for it. And there's a stack of pencils here giving basically six steps. Step back, exercise, talk it out, reframe, focus, and breathe. A joyful measure, happiness makes up in height what it lacks in length. Everyday miracles. Rescue in a bottle. Curtis Whitson knew the waterfall was coming. He drafted down the area Arroyo Seco, a river in central California, before. He figured he would hop out of his raft into the shallow water, rappel down the rocks on either side of the falls, and continue on his way as he had on a previous trip. But this year was different. Heavy snow and spring rains had turned the usually manageable falls into something fierce. And this year, instead of his buddy Whitson's companion, were his girlfriend, Crystal Ramirez, and his 13-year-old son, Hunter. As the three of them approached the falls late in the afternoon of the third day of their camping trip, Whitson could tell from the increasing whirl of water at the narrowing canyon that they were in serious trouble. There was no way where they'd be able to rappel down the rocks as planned. The water was just gushing through there with tremendous force, recalls Whitson, 45. They could wade into the shore, but would anyone find them there? They had no cell service. They hadn't seen a single person in the past 3 days, and Whitson knew that they'd be sharing the ground there with rattlesnakes and mountain lions. As he pondered what to do, Whitson hit on a bit of luck. He heard voices coming from the other side of the falls. He yelled, but the sound of the rushing water drowned him out. We have to get these people a message, Whitson thought. He grabbed a stick and pulled out his pocket knife to carve "help" in it. Then he tied a rope to it so the people would know it wasn't just any stick. He tried tossing it over the falls, but it floated away in the wrong direction. "We've got to do something," Whitson yelled to his son. "Have we got anything else?" Then he spotted his green Nalgene water bottle. Whitson grabbed it and carved "help" on it. Ramirez also reminded him that he had a pen and paper, which he brought to play games with, in his backpack. Whitson knew it was a long shot, but he scrawled, 6:15:19. "We are stuck here by the waterfall. Get help, please," and shoved the note into the bottle. This time his throw over the waterfall was perfect. "All right, that's all we can do," Whitson told Hunter. It took 30 minutes to navigate back upstream to the beach where they'd had lunch. They made a fire and laid out a tarp. With no reasonable expectation that their message in a bottle would find its way to anyone, they threw another Hail Mary pass. They spelled out SOS in white rocks, which they set on the blue tarp. As evening wore on, they placed a headlamp with a flashing light on a ledge so that the SOS could be seen from overhead. About 10:30 p.m., they decided they probably weren't going to get rescued that night, so they pulled out their sleeping bags. Before turning in, Ramirez stoked the fire to keep the mountain lions away. Then, just after midnight, they heard a helicopter hovering above them. Whitson turned to his son and started shaking him. "They're here," he said. Whitson ran over to the headlamp and started flashing it at the helicopter. He, Ramirez, and Hunter were waving and hollering when they heard the magic words. This is search and rescue. You have been found. The helicopter circled as the pilot looked for a good place to land. Finding none, the crews announced to the campers over the PA system that they would not be rescued until morning and told them to conserve their firewood. The next morning, the helicopter returned and lowered a crew member on a cable. Then the rescuers lifted Hunter, Ramirez, and Whitson out of the gorge one by one and posited them on their gear on the closest bluff where the helicopter could safely land. It was a moment of pure happiness that these three chatted with the officers who had rescued them. Together, they marveled at the unlikelihood of it all. They said that in their 25 years that had been performing these kinds of rescues, no one's ever been rescued by a message in a bottle, Wilson says. When the officers dropped them back at the Arroyo Seco campground, the trio learned more about the long-shot events that had saved them. Two men had seen the water bottle bobbing in the water. When they picked it up, they noticed the writing on it, "Help," which piqued their curiosity. Then they realized there was a note inside. After they read it, they hightailed it to the campground, turned the bottle in, and took off without leaving their names. It wasn't about notoriety. It wasn't about leaving their names, Whitson said. It's just a matter of, here's the water bottle, here's the note, here's the information we know. A few days after the news of the rescue broke, one of the hikers contacted Whitson. That's when he learned the rest of the story. There were actually two little girls hiking with the men that day. It was the girls who first spotted the bottle and swam to get it. Whitson is planning on having a big barbecue to meet the hikers and thank them. I imagine it's going to be one of the greatest moments of my life, he says. A work in progress. I love you just the way you are, though I do have a few suggestions. We found a fix. Keep your cat from getting a shock. Does your cat like to gnaw on electrical cables? Discourage him or her by dabbing the cords with Grainix Bitter Apple or another detergent spray for pets. Cats hate the flavor. Number two, use less soap. Money. Save money by swapping your liquid soap dispenser for a foaming version. Its pump turns regular liquid into foam, so it takes about half as much soap to create a lather, according to one study. You'll use about 16% less water, too. Number three, wear different shoes every day. Health. Who among us hasn't fallen in love with a pair of super comfy shoes and proceeded to slip them on day after day? Well, that may feel good. You aren't actually doing your feet any favors. Podiatrist Jacqueline Sutra says that wearing the same shoes day in and day out can cause foot fatigue because you're constantly using the same areas of the foot for support in walking. Make sure you have a few pairs of comfortable shoes and rotate through them. Well, that's interesting. I'd never heard that before. Number four, don't shop for a car in the rain. Hunting for a used vehicle? Go on a clear day. It's not about slippery roads for the test drive. It's that rain can hide scratches and other imperfections. Other things to look out for, no matter the weather, difficulty opening the doors, trunk or hood, or mismatched paint between the inside of the trunk and the body of the car, which may be the result of an accident. Number five, nourish your hair with breakfast. Beauty. Everything you eat at breakfast goes to fuel the body's essential system, but hair doesn't make the essential short list. That means it receives nutrients only once the major organs have been fed. Since eating breakfast fuels the body's life-giving functions right away, filling up your tank first thing means that the follicles will get the nourishment they need later in the day. Number six, sweeten your yogurt without sugar. Flavored yogurts often contain dozens of grams of sugar, but plain yogurt can be pretty blah. Add flavor without many calories with a few drops of vanilla, mint, or almond extract. You can also microwave your favorite fruit into a compote, and once it's cool, stir it into the yogurt. Number seven, clean your charging port. When you stuff your phone into your pocket or purse, lint and dust can get caught in the charging port, causing problems with charging. Similarly, dirt in the headphone jack can make it malfunction. If you are careful, you can clean any debris with a toothpick. To keep an opening clean, insert a dust plug. A package of them costs about $10 on Amazon. Protect your fingers when hammering. Ouch! Just hammered your finger instead of the tiny nail you were trying to pound into that piece of wood. Keep this from happening again. Before you start hammering, stick the nail through a small piece of thin cardboard, position the nail, and holding the cardboard by the edges, hit it home. When you're finished, use your brew-free fingers to tear away the protective cardboard. Good idea. Number 9. Clear your ears before flying. 30 minutes before takeoff, take a decongestant. Your sinus and ear membranes will shrink, leaving your nose and ears clear when you're in the air. The food on your plate. I am pork, bringing home the bacon. It is my favorite episode of The Simpsons of all time. Homer is holding forth at his dinner table about the diverse deliciousness of bacon, ham, pork chops, and other porkine products. Dad, all those come from the same animal, his daughter says helpfully. Yeah, right, Lisa, Homer responds, amused by her naivete. A wonderful, magical animal. As is usually the case, Homer was speaking a fundamental truth to which he happened to be hilarious oblivious. I am pretty magical. For starters, my fellow pigs are as smart as most any dog, capable of being taught how to play video games. I even make a great pet and can live for 20 years. But if eating me is a route you prefer, so be it. After all, I'm the sole farmer's animal whose main purpose is to be food. I don't graze pastures, pull plows, lay eggs, produce drinkable milk, or make wool. Nearly every part of me is useful and succulent, and my range of flavors and textures is unrivaled. No wonder I'm the most consumed meat in the world, even as two major religions, Judaism and Islam, prohibit eating pork. The rest of you grill my chops, braise my shanks, cure my leg into hams and prosciutto, devour me in pâtés, fry my skin into crispy pork rinds, and so much more. I'm the commercial cornerstone of meat of barbecue, my ribs and shoulders slowly smoked over hardwood until tender and flavorful. And then there's bacon. Oh, bacon, the darling of breakfast, burgers, BLTs, salads, and let's be honest, pretty much anything else you put on a plate. Hungry yet? Yes, ma'am. My fat is arguably what makes me so extraordinary. It's saturated just enough to be solid yet silky at room temperature, making me perfect for chopping, mixing with seasoning and other meats, and curing into delectable sausages, terrines, and roulettes. In fact, it's the foundation of the whole centuries-old tradition of curing meat. Charcutiers can't produce quite the same sublime mouthful of beef, chicken, or game that they can with porky old me. All this talk of fat might have you confused if you remember the other white meat. This was the ad slogan developed in 1977 for the National Pork Board as a way of keeping me relevant during the anti-fat craze of the time. It worked. My U.S. sales grew 20% by 1991 as consumers began to view me as a health-conscious choice alongside white meat chicken. I'm nonetheless considered red meat by nutritionists and the USDA, and always have been. Here's the truth. Sometimes I'm healthful, sometimes I'm not. The other white meat campaign focused on my loin and tenderloin, those swaths of flesh along my spine that are quite low in fat and good sources of protein and minerals. But other parts of me, not so much. You'll find the fattest slabs of fat only on my belly, back, right on top of those lean loins and jowls, falling in between, fat-wise, are my shoulders and legs. Think of them as my dark meat, with fat interspersed with muscle, as well as lots of connective tissue. That tissue, actually a collagen that forms when a single muscle is well exercised, may start off tough when it's raw or briefly cooked, but roast a pork shoulder for 8 hours, and that muscly tissue will melt into succulent gelatin to produce a fall-off-the-bone pork juiciness that makes you humans fall off your chairs. One thing everyone knows about me is that I'm an insatiable omnivore, which means that those who raise me have the power to vary how fatty I am and how I taste simply by feeding me differently. Take the Pata Negra pens in Spain and Portugal that spend their lives grazing on acorns. Their famous, funky, translucent pink Llama Ibérica, Iberian ham, is so rich in healthy monounsaturated fats, up to 55%, a higher ratio than any other meat, that farmers call their hogs four-legged olive trees. Such a privileged lifestyle and meals don't come cheap. These days, a 15-pound bone-in ham from the elite Spanish brand Chico Juntas will stop your heart at $1,200 or $80 a pound. Meanwhile, a conventionally farmed American pig fattened on the run-of-the-mill grains and meal made from meat and bone products, produces pork that's higher in saturated fat, but cost a mere $4 a pound. There are a few easier weeknight meals than a pork chop roasted in a cast iron pan. But boy, do you Americans overcook me. Chops, lacking in fat as they are, dry out when they get too hot. For decades, the USDA made it worse by recommending an internal temperature of 165 degrees for pork, which delivers a very dry pork indeed. In recent years, they dropped it to 145 degrees Fahrenheit, which is medium well and a real improvement. Juicy and just having lost its pink. Sink your teeth in and enjoy the magic. Perfect oven roasted bacon. And there's a picture here of, oh, it looks so good. For the tender version, on a rimmed baking sheet, set a wire rack or a large piece of crumpled aluminum foil into accordion-like peaks and valleys. Arrange bacon slices close together with no overlaps. Place a sheet with bacon on the middle rack of a cold oven that's set to 400 degrees and allow it to heat. Rotating the pan once midway. Cook 15 to 25 minutes depending on the thickness of the rashers and your desired doneness. Transfer cooked bacon to paper towels to drain, then serve. For the shatteringly crisp all-over version, line the rim baking sheet with foil, only without the ridges, and follow the same cooking directions. Your true stories, just like Dad. Nearly 25 years ago, my father told me about his experiences in the Vietnam War. One night he was stranded in unfamiliar territory with a flat tire. Luckily, a fellow soldier came along and gave my father his spare. Now I'm a paramedic, and I recently worked with an older EMT I had never met. At the end of our 12-hour shift, he said, "You know, you look like your father." He recognized my last name. I had been paired up with a hero who saved my father 50 years earlier. Wow, small world. A very special finish. My son, Mark, volunteered to help Cherry, a young runner at a local Special Olympics. Cherry was happy and enthusiastic. Mark encouraged her, kept her calm, and let her know when it was time to line up for her race. When the starting pistol sounded, she took off like a lightning bolt, leaving her fellow racers behind. As she neared the finish line, she stopped, turned around, and motioned for the other runners to hurry. She waited for them so they could all cross the finish line together. Waste not, want not. I was getting lunch at the deli counter of our neighborhood grocery store. In addition to my sandwich, I ordered a quarter pound of macaroni salad. The clerk put the salad on the scale and apologized that it was a little more than I had asked for. Was that all right? I said it was fine and it wouldn't go to waste. That's when the grandmotherly customer next in line replied, "Well, it sure would go to mine." 13 things. The dirt on organic farming. And there's a picture, a drawing of a cucumber, a broccoli, a sliced onion, some greens, etc. Number one, people assume that organic products come from small family farms, but many of the foods labeled organic in supermarkets are actually produced by large corporations. For example, Conagra owns Alexia. A private equity company owns Bolthouse Farms. An organic producer grower, Earthbound Farm, is itself a giant, earning nearly $500 million in 2018. Big or small, a farm must follow the same rules to be certified organic. Fertilizing soil with natural ingredients such as compost and manure, planting with organic seeds, rotating crops to prevent soil erosion and disease, and allowing animals to graze. Number two, using pesticides isn't completely forbidden in an organic farm. There are about 25 chemicals that have been approved for use, says Jesse Shade, Ph.D., Director of Science Programming at the Organic Center in Washington, D.C. But before organic farmers can even use those 25, they have to prove that they have used every other method possible for controlling their pests and weeds. Number three, organic farmers aren't supposed to use antibiotics, but their cows do sometimes get sick. You have to give your cows medicine if they need it, says Shade says. Also allowed, aspirin. Cows get swollen joints, too. Number four. While it may seem that there are all-natural farms everywhere these days, less than 1% of the 911 million acres of farmland in the United States are certified organic, according to the Pew Research Center. The most organic state is Vermont, where 11% of the farms have USDA designations. Number five. Nearly half of organic farmers are women. even though women make up only 29% of all American farmers, according to the USDA. Organic farmers are also younger, average age of 52, than farmer overall, 58, according to Modern Farmer. Number six, there was no need for certified organic before the mid-20th century because organic was the only way to farm. But in the 1940s, after World War II, nitrate factories that had been making bombs switched to producing synthetic fertilizers. Ironically, the area of mass-scale chemical fertilizer and pesticide use is commonly referred to as the Green Revolution because of the dramatic increase in crop yields worldwide. For instance, the yield of rice in India increased by 164% from 1950s to the 1990s. Number seven. We know it's good for our health, but eating organic can put a strain on the budget. According to the USDA, organic produce carries a premium of 10 to 30%. Fortunately, a study has shown that the risk of ingesting pesticides is relatively low with certain foods, primarily because their thicker skins or outer coverings protect us. At the top of the Environmental Working Group's Clean 15 list, avocados, sweet corn, with less than 1% of the sample showing any pesticide residue. Number eight. The biggest organic retailer in the country isn't Whole Foods. It's Costco, which sold about $4 billion in organic produce in 2017, compared with $3.6 billion at Whole Foods. Number nine. The top-selling organic products in order, cow's milk, eggs, chicken, apples, lettuce, strawberries, grapes, tomatoes, and corn, according to the Pew Research Center. Number 10. You know which residents of organic farms are all that environmentally friendly? The cows. They burp and fart up to twice as much methane as conventionally reared cattle. Methane is 20 times more powerful greenhouse gas than CO2. That's funny. I didn't know that. 11. Don't even think of saying your farmer's organic if it isn't. The government will fine you as much as $17,952 for each time you falsely sell or label a product as organic. The USDA has a list of people fined for fraudulent certificates on its website. Number 12. Perhaps the most famous organic farmer in the United States today is Joel Salatin. He is the author of books on the marvelous pigness of pigs and has appeared in documentaries such as Food Incorporated. The vineyard-based Salatin also enjoys a burgeoning friendship with Prince Charles. The fellow farmer and future king has invited Salatin to his residence in Dumfries, Scotland. Number 13. Organic farmer isn't just about feeding you. According to Statista, pet owners will send up to 6.8 billion organic food for their dogs and cats this year, more than double than a decade ago. But beware, animal lovers. Food Farm Natural does not carry the same requirement as those that are certified organic. Great moments in American cheese history. President Thomas Jefferson first ate macaroni and cheese on a trip to France. He loved the dish so much that he later served it at state dinners in 1802. For his last public party in the White House, President Andrew Jackson served his guests a 1,400-pound wheel of cheese. It was gone within 2 hours. Laughter, the best medicine. A Swiss man looking for directions pulled up to a bus stop in Zurich where the American tourists are waiting. "Entschuldige, können Sie Deutsch sprechen?" he asked. The two Americans just stare at him. "Parlez-vous français?" he tries. The two Americans continue to stare. "Parlate italiano?" No response. The Swiss guide gives up and drives off. The first American turns to the second and says, "We should really learn a foreign language." "Why?" asked the second. "This guy knew three and it didn't do him any good." What happens when an artist has trouble finding inspiration? She draws a blank. I just read that 4,153,237 people got married last year. Not to cause any trouble, but shouldn't that be an even number? So you're telling me a shrimp fried this rice? A flea runs this market? This garage is on sale? The police arrested a man selling secret formula tablets that he claimed gave eternal youth. It was actually the fifth time he'd been caught for committing the same medical fraud. He had been arrested in 1794, 1856, 1928, and 1983. A nurse noted a golfer pacing up and down the hallways outside an operating room where another golfer, who had a golf ball lodged in his throat, was being treated. Is he your relative? The Kirsten asked. No, said the golfer. It's my ball. My husband cooks for me like I'm a god by placing burnt offerings before me every night. Two old guys, Fred and Sam, went to the movies. A few minutes into the film, Fred noticed Sam searching for something under his seat. What are you doing? Fred asked. Well, Sam sounded aggravated. I had a candy in my mouth, but it fell out. Forget it. It'll be dirty by now. I've got to find it. My teeth are in it. My dad suggested that I register for an organic organ donor card. He's a man after my own heart. Oh, it's terrible. Deadlines. An obituary for some you don't know can seem bland, but these lines from real obits might just make you miss a person you never met. His regrets were few, but include eating a rotisserie hot dog from a convenience store in the summer of 2002. Civilians will recognize him best as Spider-Man and thank him for protecting our city. His wife refuses to honor his request to have him standing in the corner of the room with a glass of Jack Daniels in his hand so that he would appear more natural to visitors. When the doctors confronted his daughters with the news that your father is a very sick man, in unison they replied, "You have no idea." Sit tight on standing desk. News from the world of medicine. Desks can be adjusted for either sitting or standing are sometimes touted as a way to fight obesity. But according to a review of 53 studies, no significant results support this claim. This makes sense, given that simply standing doesn't burn many calories. However, some study participants found that standing helped them feel less fatigued, reduced lower back pain, and improved blood pressure mildly. Desk height, monitor height, and amount of time standing, and use of anti-fatigue mat to cushion the feet all affected the benefits people experienced. A new type of dementia. A report published in the journal Brain found that up to a third of Alzheimer's-like dementia cases may actually be caused by a newly identified disease called LATE, L-A-T-E, which stands for limbic predominant age-related TDP-43 encephalopathy. LATE generally progresses more gradually than Alzheimer's and is marked by the accumulation of the TDP-43 brain protein, while Alzheimer's is associated with the beta android and tall brain processes. But many people appear to suffer from both diseases, triggering a more rapid decline than either condition alone. This finding may help explain why trials of drugs designed to curb beta amyloid and tau have failed to help patients and point the way to more effective treatments in the future. Hands-only version of CPR saves lives. Traditional cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, includes both chest compression and mouth-to-mouth rescue breaths, which some people are reluctant to perform because they're afraid of contracting an infectious disease. But when a patient is in cardiac arrest, according to a review of national Swedish data between 2000 and 2017, you can leave out the mouth-to-mouth breathing and still save a life. Compared with no CPR, receiving the standard or hands-only version at least doubled a patient's chance of survival, and the likelihood that someone will receive CPR from a bystander rose by nearly 70% with Sweden's promotion of the compression-only version. Magnets help eyes. The fluid in your eyes helps protect your cornea. However, if too much builds up, it can cause glaucoma, an increase in ocular pressure that may damage the optic nerve and cause blindness. Glaucoma drainage devices, which remove excess fluid, are an increasingly common treatment, but over time, microorganisms within your body collect on the devices and render them inoperable. Now researchers have designed a self-cleaning drainage device with tiny components that vibrate when a doctor passes a magnet over them, shaking loose the microorganisms. Inactive ingredients are not always harmless. A pill's inactive components aren't meant to affect the body directly. They're merely intended to improve qualities such as taste, absorption, and shelf life. But when researchers surveyed more than 42,000 medications, nearly all contained at least one substance such as lactose, food dye, or peanut oil, known to trigger allergic reactions or digestive issues in some people. If you take several medications and have stomach or allergy symptoms, the small amounts in each might be collectively causing a problem. It isn't always easy to learn what's in a formulation, but pharmacists can help identify possible allergens. Over-the-counter products have a list of active and inactive ingredients on the package or an attached label. Take blood pressure medication at night. If you're one of millions of Americans who take blood pressure medication as part of their morning routine, you may dread to think that. A new study has shown that taking your medication at night instead might save your life. The study was simple yet thorough. 19,084 Caucasian adults who had been prescribed one or more of five common blood pressure medications were randomly assigned to take them either immediately upon awakening or right before turning off the lights to go to bed. After more than 6 years, those who took their medicine at night had slashed their risk of dying from heart or blood vessel problems by 66% more than the morning pill poppers did. Plus, their risk of stroke plummeted by 49% or more, of heart attack by 44% more, and of heart failure by 42% more. It's not entirely clear why taking the medication at night affects the results so dramatically, though the researchers have previously reported that average systolic blood pressure drops when a person is asleep is the most significant independent indication of cardiovascular disease risk, regardless of blood pressure measurements taken when awake or when visiting a doctor. While more research is needed to confirm whether the effects held true with the other ethnic groups, there's little downside and a potentially huge upside to taking the medication at bedtime. Beating antibiotic-resistant bacteria. A combination of antibiotics and probiotics was recently shown to destroy two strains of drug-resistant bacteria that infect wounds, thus providing a potential answer to a threat that kills at least 23,000 people a year in the United States. And blue light ages fruit flies. A recent experiment on fruit flies showed that blue light damaged their brain cells in a way that accelerated aging and shortened their lifespan by about 10%. While there are no studies showing comparable effect on humans, we do know that blue light from phones and computers can impact your vision and interfere with your sleep. Besides limiting your exposure, you can try glasses that filter out blue light and set your devices to block blue emissions. Find the doctor you trust. Rushed appointments, profits over patients, faulty diagnosis, there are plenty of reasons to worry about medical providers today. A veteran R&D health journalist shares a hard-won lesson from her reporting and from her family's only health crisis. In 2011, my husband Pete began having strange episodes of lightheadedness. They lasted less than a minute and often happened when he exercised. He went to see his longtime primary care physician, who suspected he was dehydrated. She prescribed Gatorade, but the episodes got more frequent and severe. One night at dinner with the kids, Pete completely zoned out. He didn't understand what we were saying, and he wasn't able to get any words out. We immediately called his doctor, but we couldn't get her on the phone. Her nurse referred us to a neurologist, but he had a 6-week wait for an appointment. After some begging, we got in sooner, and he sent Pete for an MRI. The scan showed that Pete had a brain tumor the size of a golf ball. Thankfully, after a long and harrowing journey, Pete has fully recovered. But my experience navigating that medical crisis now helps inform and inspire my work as a healthcare journalist. If I had to distill everything I've learned over the years as a patient, spouse, parent, and medical reporter into one lesson, it's this: trust, but verify. While I believe most doctors have our best interests at heart, our system is deeply flawed. Medical errors are estimated to be the third leading cause of death in the United States. In fact, most of us will receive an incorrect or late diagnosis at least once in our lives, often with serious consequences, according to a National Academy of Medicine analysis. News headlines about outrageous bills, conflicts of interest, and depression of care plant more seeds of doubt. Doctors are keenly aware of the problems, but many of the underlying circumstances are beyond their control. Electronic record keeping, a boon to efficiency in many ways, takes an average of nearly 6 hours of primary care physicians a day, more time than is spent with patients. Most face-to-face visits are about 15 minutes, and down to only 8 minutes in some parts of the country, says Andrew Moore Singer, M.D., president of Primary Care Programs, a nonprofit working to improve primary care. Physicians are literally running from room to room, he says. We have physicians tell us they are not constantly constipated because they can't even stop to go to the bathroom. What's more, insurance companies have cut doctors' payments, forcing them to see more patients or invest in lucrative sidelines, such as selling supplements, medical devices, or imaging services, to keep their practices in the black. These trends have driven a huge wedge into the patient-physician relationship, says Dr. Morris Singer. This is not a minor concern. Research shows that without trust, a patient might not feel comfortable sharing information his or her physician needs to provide quality medical advice. Patients who trust their health care providers are more likely to follow their treatment plans, have fewer symptoms, practice healthier behaviors, and be more satisfied with their care. In addition, a doctor who knows you and your health history is less likely to overprescribe or send you for unnecessary tests. Finally, I believe a doctor is more likely to make an extra effort for you if you have a relationship. It's just human nature. Building that relationship takes time and care, and sometimes that's still not enough. Pete had been seeing his primary care doctor for almost a decade when he called about his lightheadedness, yet he still had to wait 3 weeks for an appointment. Once he got in, she listened carefully as he described his symptoms, but she was out the door 15 minutes later. Would more time have yielded more accurate diagnosis of an earlier MRI? It's hard to know. Maybe we can do more as patients. Dr. Morris Singer says it helps to show your doctors that you recognize the pressures they face. When your physician comes into the room, say something like, "How are you doing? I know it can't be easy in the healthcare these days." Asking about family, travel plans, or other personal details help connect on a human level. When the exam is underway, ask your doctor whether or not you can see the notes he or she is typing. "Do you mind if I take a look?" suggests Lolita Alboroski, MD, University of Chicago, who has studied the impact computers have had on doctor-patient relationship. "I tried this at my most recent physical. My doctor didn't seem to mind. I even pointed out that the system still listed a prescription I was no longer taking." Steve Feldman, MD, PhD, a dermatologist at Wake Forest School of Medicine, has his own strategy for building relationships with his patients. He discovered that they are more likely to take their prescriptions if he gives them a business card with his cell phone number and asks them to call him 3 days to tell him how the medicine is working. "They can't believe I gave them my cell phone number. It establishes both trust and accountability," he says. Unfortunately, Pete's difficulty getting in to see both his primary care doctor and neurologist denied our confidence that he would get the care he needed, and things got scarier. The MRO showed that Pete had a meningioma, the good kind of brain tumor, the urologist explained to us, because it's usually benign. But Pete's was large, and it was wrapped around his carotid artery, pressing on his optic nerve and extending into the speech center of his brain. The urologist sent us straight to a neurosurgeon, supposedly the best in the city. He spent an hour patiently answering our questions, but his prognosis was terrifying. The tumor needed to be removed, and the operation would likely leave Pete blind in one eye and possibly without the ability to speak. With Pete's episodes of lightheadedness occurring more frequently, the surgeon scheduled the surgery for the following week. What happened next can be described only as a stroke of luck. Pete and I reached out to a rabbi at our temple for comfort, and she connected us with another congregant whose son had undergone the surgery to remove a brain tumor a few years earlier. She encouraged us to get a second opinion from the neurosurgeon at Duke University Hospital Medical Center. Hey, our boys, who had operated on her son. "He can do things other surgeons can't," she said. As a health reporter, I knew objectively that a second opinion could be valuable. A 2017 Mayo Clinic study found that 1 in 5 people who sought a second opinion went home with a completely new diagnosis. Another 66% got new information or a revised diagnosis. A second opinion can also reveal different treatment options. Its survey shows that more than half of Americans don't bother, even when faced with a major medical decision. As Pete and I debated what to do, I understood why. Duke is a 3-hour drive away, which seemed like a hassle. We liked the local surgeon. Most important, Pete couldn't wait to get this thing out of his brain. But the woman from our temple insisted and even called Duke to get an appointment for us. That appointment changed everything. The Duke surgeon told us he uses a different technique. It was lower risk and would spare Pete's eyesight. If your doctor is irritated by your decision to seek a second opinion, as Pete's local neurosurgeon seemed to be, it's a red flag that perhaps he or she is not the right fit. Smart doctors won't feel threatened or offended, says Robert Arnold, MD, chair of the University of Pittsburgh Institute for Doctor-Patient Communication. They know that once you get that second opinion and come back, it's way better, because you will both be on the same page about the best way to move forward. To prepare for Pete's appointment to Duke, I started reading up on meningiomas. I tried to stick to the fact-based websites published by academic medical centers, such as Don Hawkins, Harvard, and the Mayo Clinic. I also look for condition-specific websites, especially those staffed with medical professionals. It may sound obvious, but being well prepared for appointments can help maximize what little time you have with your doctors and perhaps give them insights into your case they might otherwise receive. You should do your homework about your doctors, too. While they may believe they are unbiased, physicians are not immune to money or gifts, including meals or speaking fees they receive from pharmaceutical or medical device companies. A ProPublica analysis found that doctors who take such payments are two or three times more likely to prescribe brand-name drugs compared with those who don't. You can look up how much money your doctor has received and home from whom on ProPublica's dollars for docs. If your doctor is listed, that doesn't mean he or she has done anything wrong, but you may want to ask whether the medications you are taking are made by those companies and whether there are any cheaper generic alternatives. To get the best care, trust but verify. See the same doctor, not just any doctor in a large practice, for your regular checkups as well as if you are sick. Ask about office policies. How much time do they set aside for the first appointment? 1 hour is ideal. 30 minutes is more realistic. Share your concerns. If you have any doubts about your diagnosis or treatment plan, don't be shy about telling your doctor so he or she can try to address them. Do your own research. In addition to consulting well-known reputable sites such as Mayo Clinic or HopkinsMedOc.org, reach out to your own network of friends and family. Check credentials. You can find information on malpractice or disciplinary actions against physicians at docinfo.org. Ask about possible financial conflicts. Does the office allow representatives from pharmaceutical companies to pitch products to the staff? Does the physician have a family interest in an imaging center, a surgery center, or special medical equipment? If you're uncomfortable asking your doctor or you just don't want to spend your precious face-to-face time on those questions, ask the office manager. Honest communication involves the entire practice. And a couple of laugh lines before we close. Never get into a lane merging game of chicken with a person who has a garbage bag for car door windows. The worst thing about parallel parking is witnesses. Now that I've removed my windshield wipers, I shouldn't be getting any more parking tickets. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-513. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Thanks so much for listening.